Dr. David Downing is a professor of English at Elizabethtown College in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. He's the author of 4 award-winning books on C.S. Lewis and has also written short fiction for Christianity Today and other periodicals. Dr. Downing's new book is entitled Looking for the King, an Inklings novel. And David Downing's on the telephone with us this morning from Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning, Bob. I'm glad to join you.
Thank you for being with us today. The title of your book is Looking for the King, an Inklings novel. Who are the Inklings?
Okay. I used that subtitle because I wanted people to know there was a literary group that C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien belonged to, among several other distinguished writers. Some people don't recognize the term, so they ask me already, inklings of what? You know, what inklings are there in this novel?
Mm-hmm.
But they were primarily an informal literary circle that met in Oxford from the 1930s to the late 40s. As they got a little more organized, they tended to meet on Tuesday mornings at a local pub called the Eagle and Child, which they called the Bird and Baby. And then they would meet in C.S. Lewis's rooms at his college on Thursday evenings to read manuscripts and critique each other's works in progress. And the two most prominent members were C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, and they both had the privilege of hearing each other read classics like Lord of the Rings and Perelandra and That Hideous Strength. But there were a number of other extremely dynamic personalities, so there were 12 or 15 people that were involved on sort of an irregular basis in the Tuesday morning meetings at the pub and the Thursday evening meetings in Lewis's room.
It would be amazing to be a fly on the wall during these meetings, and that is what you do in your book. You kind of give us a seat at the table with these famous literary figures.
That's exactly right. I speak a lot on Lewis and Tolkien at conferences, and people, they often know the Narnia Chronicles and they know the Lord of the Rings, and they haven't made the connection. And somehow they find out that these two were best friends and they belonged to the same literary circle and they were both professors at Oxford. And they always ask, what were they really like and how did they get along and what did they talk about and what about these Inklings meetings and don't you wish you could attend an Inklings meeting? So I decided to try to oblige them through imagination and take them in a time machine back to 1940. And try to give them a sense of what it would be like to be having a pub lunch with C.S. Lewis or going to visit Tolkien at his home or actually going to an Inklings meeting and joining in all the camaraderie and all the repartee.
The Inklings are not the only characters in your book. Give us, if you will, an overview of Looking for the King.
Okay. There's 6 chapters which involve Inklings characters, and there's 6 chapters which are more of an adventure romance story. There are 2 young Americans who were over in America in 1940. Now, this is when England is already at war with Germany, but America hasn't joined the war. That won't happen until after Pearl Harbor in December 1941. The young man, Tom McCord, has a master's in English, and he thinks he can prove there was a historical King Arthur. So he's wandering around the country trying to make a name for himself, trying to prove that the legendary King Arthur was actually a historical figure. And he meets a young lady named Laura Hartman, who is staying with her aunt in Oxford while her aunt's husband is on active duty in the British Army. And she's having these strange, troubling dreams, and part of the reason she wanted to come to England is she feels like the answer to her dreams lies somewhere in England. And so the two of them team up and discover they have a lot of mutual interest and they can actually help each other. And so about half the story is a quest narrative. As they begin trying to find a precious object, someone is shadowing them and following them and thinking that they're onto something important, and they're trying to figure out who's after them, and they're meeting with the Inklings on a regular basis to try to get advice about some of their various wanderings around England.
It makes a very interesting adventure story and gives us a glimpse into what life might have been like in England at the beginning of the Second World War. David, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, really 2 things came together in the summer of 2005. My wife and I had gone to a Lewis and Tolkien conference in Oxford, and we decided to rent a car and go see King Arthur country to visit the sites that are traditionally associated with his birth, such as Tintagel, which is a beautiful castle ruin right on the Cornwall coast, and Bodwin Moor, which is a big pond where Arthur supposedly received the sword Excalibur. And when we were visiting all these King Arthur sites, we kept hearing about Joseph of Arimathea. There's a very strong tradition in England that Joseph was Jesus' uncle, and that he used to bring him as a boy to England. He was the idea is that he was a wealthy tin merchant, and he traveled all the way to England as part of his trade, and that he brought Jesus there to England as a boy. And then after the crucifixion and the resurrection, he saved the Holy Grail and the Spear of Destiny, which was the spear that thrust the side of Christ, and brought them to England and actually founded the English church, the Christian church in England, long before the missionaries came from Rome. And I'd always thought of this as kind of tall tales of the Paul Bunyan variety. But when you get to that part of the country, they take it much more seriously. And when you're on the East Coast in America, people say George Washington slept here. And when you're traveling in Somerset and Cornwall, people say, oh, Joseph of Arimathea, he was here. They talked about him as Old Joe, or, oh, Big Joe, he was here. It sounded like they were just talking to him in a pub last week. And so I was interested how many different places feel that they have not only the Holy Grail, which people have heard about, but also the Spear of Longinus, or the Spear of Destiny. And this tradition actually goes back further than the Holy Grail. It goes back to the time of Constantine. He was the Roman emperor who first declared Christianity to be the official religion of the Roman Empire. And he felt that he had been given the spear by the faithful Roman soldier who had become a Christian after the crucifixion, and he'd saved the spear and passed it on from generation to generation. So this object shows up as this mystical relic in Constantine, in historical discussions of Charlemagne in the 9th century, in Athelstan, who was the grandson of Alfred the Great, the Anglo-Saxon king. And so my premise was to try to put together a little bit of an Indiana Jones quest narrative, mm-hmm. where they are going around England trying to see if they can locate the spear. Now, the problem is, this is actually true. Hitler had a fascination with the occult, and he had a spear called the Heilige Lance, or the Holy Lance, which he found in Vienna. But it didn't quite fit the description of a Roman spear. It looks more like a medieval spear. Mm-hmm. So there's speculation that he had agents going around Europe trying to find a more authentic incarnation of the Spear of Destiny, which supposedly made its owner invincible. Mm-hmm. So I tried to interweave some of this legendary material with some more serious discussions of theology and literature and matters of faith and family in their discussions with the Inklings. All three of them knew about these traditions, and so they were able to advise my two young Americans on where they should look next for the Spear of Destiny.
In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Catholic Forum. I'm Bob Krebs, and my guest is Dr. David Downing, author of Looking for the King, an Inklings novel. A great gift this Christmas for the C.S. Lewis or J.R.R. Tolkien fan on your list. What do you want the readers to get out of the story, David?
Well, I think one of the main themes, my young American named Tom McCord is very ambitious, as young people often are. He has, on one side, he's kind of conceited. On another side, he's rather insecure, which I'm a college professor, so I'm around people about this age. And he really goes to England wanting to make a name for himself. He wants to find the historic King Arthur, and then he wants to find the Spear of Destiny. And he really wants to be somebody. He just doesn't want to be anonymous. And he really associates fame and fortune with fulfillment. And when he meets Lewis and Tolkien and even Laura Hartman, this young woman who's having these troubling dreams, she has a solid Christian faith, and she's very spiritually grounded. And he sees people who really value friendship, storytelling, camaraderie, family. And he starts discovering that definition of happiness, or his definition of what would make life significant, becomes more and more in question. So it's really a spiritual journey for Tom as much as it is a physical quest for the spear. I think that's the main theme is sometimes as Americans especially, people get so dazzled by celebrity and, you know, don't you wish you could win the lottery or be on TV and all that sort of thing. And they really lose sight of much more basic values about where contentment and fulfillment come from, especially when they're grounded in a Christian worldview.
You must have done some very extensive research for this book. What did you find out that surprised you the most?
Part of what surprised me, I had been reading all these authors as writers and thinkers, and I hadn't really paid that much attention to their personal lives. And so as I went back, and when you do a novel, you have to talk about how someone dresses, what sorts of food they like to eat, what sorts of, you know, their sense of humor and conversation. So I really had to go back and reread the biographies and the letters, looking for different things that I could turn into description and dialogue. And things I'd never noticed before, Charles Williams, who was the third member of the group, he was an editor for Oxford University Press, and they relocated to Oxford during the war years because of all the bombing in London. And you just run across little things that he wore gold-rimmed spectacles, and that when he lectured, he never used notes. He had a photographic memory, but he would get so energetic that you could hear the coins clinking in his pockets, and sometimes he would be so loud and so dynamic that dogs would start howling outside the lecture hall. So just these colorful details. I was also really struck by Lewis's sense of humor. People often think of him as writing these serious theological treatises on mere Christianity and the problem of pain and a grief observed about his own wife's death. But when you go back and read his letters looking for little quips that you might use in dialogue, you find a lot of delightful one-liners. I just read one right as I was writing my chapter on Lewis where someone said they were moving to California for the climate. And he says, I'd never move somewhere for the climate unless I were a vegetable. And I thought, well, that's a great line to use in a novel. Now, that was part of my impetus for writing the novel, is there's so many interesting things that Lewis and Tolkien say in their letters, but most people are not going to sit down and tackle 1,500 pages of letters to get this quip or this insight. So I thought it'd be fun to take some of the things I enjoyed most about the letters and put them into conversation among Lewis and Tolkien and their friends.
What kind of reaction or feedback are you getting from your readers?
I'm generally getting quite positive reviews from the fan base. It will be interesting for me to see what reviewers think who aren't as well acquainted with the Tolkien and Lewis. There are a number of websites and magazines and journals and fanzines for Lewis and Tolkien, and they're all quite positive because I think they really enjoy getting to know them as people and enjoying that feeling of actually sitting down with Lewis for lunch or actually getting to visit Tolkien in his home and meeting his daughter. Another fact you mentioned a minute ago, I'd forgotten that Tolkien had two sons involved in World War II. One was an RAF pilot and one was an anti-aircraft gunner. It was interesting when I wrote this novel because I included these details, and other people who thought they knew Lewis and Tolkien pretty well would challenge me. And they would say, oh, you're being too melodramatic when you claim that his two sons, one is a pilot and one is an anti. We all know the war was important. And I say, well, actually, that's factually correct. It was kind of interesting. The parts that I made up, I got away with. But whenever I tried to put something in there that was actually from Tolkien's life or from Lewis's life, somebody would say, oh, I don't think that's very convincing. I think you need to take that part out. I don't know if you've noticed the back of the novel, but I actually included some footnotes. Whenever someone said something improbable or I had a fact that was improbable, I actually put down a footnote to show people that I wasn't just making this up. This is actually from the biographies or the letters.
Well, David, this is a fascinating topic, and we could go on talking about it all day, but unfortunately we're out of time. Lookingfortheking.com is the website to get more information about the book and to see a trailer for the book. Where can listeners get a copy of Looking for the King, an Inklings novel?
At www.ignatius.com and also www.lookingfortheking.com, you can either get the order the print version, or you can get a Kindle version or an audio version. There's a delightful audio version by a professional actor who does all the voices of Tolkien and Lewis. He actually studied them on YouTube to get their voices right.
Wow.
And they also had that great video, which the first time I saw it, I wanted to go back and reread my own novel. It sounded so exciting. They did a great job with the trailer for the book.
The book is called Looking for the King, an Inklings novel. Dr. David Downing is the author. Thanks for being with us today, David, on Catholic Forum. And I hope you have a blessed Christmas.
Thank you, Bob. I enjoyed talking to you.